Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
They warned us that something was coming.
If there is ever an end in this forever war, it will be because of you and your strong right hand.
I'm on your side!
Sorry, my bad.
All right, guys, so we're just going to get straight into this crapshoot. So we went and saw a movie. It's called Hellboy, the 2019 reboot of the Guillermo del Toro franchise from...
The first one?
Who's the comic book? Who makes these comics? Dark Horse?
Dark Horse, yeah.
Yeah, Dark Horse Comics. So a lot of you are going to be familiar with the source material, or at least some of the stories that go along with Hellboy. In this iteration of the franchise, he is played by David Harbour from...
Stranger Things.
Thanks,
fame.
Yeah, Stranger Things. Yeah, and we get Neil Marshall's directing, Andrew Cosby's writing. It clocks in at just, right at 2 hours?
It's 2 hours and 1 minute.
So the storyline for this one, per the plot summary from IMDb, is based on the graphic novels by Mike Mignola, Hellboy, caught between the worlds of the supernatural and human, battles an ancient sorceress bent on revenge. Welcome to generic Hollywood land. I mean, you know, we get horrible plot summaries all the time, but man, I think that one actually kind of takes the fucking cake.
No, we've had worse.
Have we?
We had explicitly said there was like a villain. I remember one not too long ago that was just like, this is a movie. We were like, well, I knew that. Thanks.
So, all right. The taglines for this one is, or the tagline is, demons have demons too.
Wow. I didn't know that. Oh, that almost...
I think I broke Mike.
You know, we try to keep our reviews to a spoiler-free section and then a spoiler section, but from that reaction, I think people know what all they need to know.
So, all right, guys. This one was, of course, made in the U.S. Release date is April 12th, 2019. It's Summit Entertainment Millennium Films.
Let's start with somewhere easy.
I can't.
Did you like Del Toro's 2004 and 2008 movies?
Absolutely, I did. I actually really did. Those are two of the very first comic book movies that my kids saw.
Okay.
So, you know, because that's super wholesome. And, you know,
what, not Superman, demons from hell.
Well, you know, and it was funny because it was one of those things where it was on Netflix and she wanted to watch it and I was too tired to say no, much like my love life. And so we wound up watching Hellboy. I think she was maybe, it came out in 2004
and then 2008.
She was born in 2006. So we probably watched it in like 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So she was probably like 5 years old the first time she saw Hellboy and she loved the character. So of course, then she wanted to watch the second one. And I think that that was one of the things that was so kind of neat about those first movies, but you actually had characterization in a comic book movie, which you don't get a lot of, especially then.
Right. Prior to Iron Man in 2008. So right. Both of those films, I think, predate it.
They do.
Even if Golden Army's the same year, I think it came out prior. We were used to things like Blade, the X-Men movies, Ang Lee's Hulk, Daredevil, and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy.
I think there was a Punisher movie in there, too.
Yeah, Thomas Jane's in The Punisher. And while The Punisher is good and Spider-Man 1 and 2, X-Men 2, the first Blade, that's maybe 50% of the movies that came out
right
at that point. But this one, the Hellboy, the original, really did have that characterization. It wasn't so much about the narrative of the bad guys doing evil, you know, is just kind of there. The main plot is him trying to fit in, feeling like an outsider, an outcast, you know, all about his struggles and who he is.
Right. No, it was a very personal movie.
Yeah, it was starring the amazing Ron Perlman.
Right. And let's be clear, Ron Perlman is fucking awesome.
And I would say at this point, Ron Perlman is Hellboy, so.
Well, I mean, so here's the thing. I think that this movie has a lot of things going against it before they even started production.
Yeah.
Is that you had Del Toro directed the first one, right?
The first two.
Del Toro directed the first two, and I think anybody worth worth anything in the film industry mm-hmm. knows that Del Toro is an amazing director.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he does amazing things with special effects and story and pacing. And you know, he knows how to direct. He is a great director. Not only that, you had Ron Perlman, who played Hellboy. And for a lot of us, really the only way we've ever seen Hellboy is Ron Perlman playing it. You know, we don't read the Hellboy comic books. We don't read, or we don't watch the cartoons, you know, that the, all of that stuff that came out. And so what we know of Hellboy is Ron Perlman. And because it's a, you know, it's not like you're taking a superhero like Superman and putting a different face on it. Hellboy is Hellboy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all prosthetics. It's all makeup. And so it makes it difficult to have another actor not just play almost a caricature of Ron Perlman playing Hellboy.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's two strikes almost immediately for this movie before it even goes to production.
Well, and the thing is, there's a lot of trials and tribulations behind the scenes for Hellboy 3. And the truth is that it was the worst series of events, a series of unfortunate events. Hellboy 1 and 2 were both successful financially and critically. Then Del Toro got roped into doing The Hobbit, a mistake from the beginning. And unfortunately, after that, he dropped out. And then he had Pacific Rim that he was working on, and kind of too much time had passed. And at that point, Marvel had lit the torch on their kerosene tinderbox of Marvel movies. And expectations started to change. And then Del Toro got involved with a couple other different projects, all of which either didn't come to light, whether it was for movies or video games like Silent Hills and things like that got canceled repeatedly. Perlman wanted to do it, but then the funding couldn't be got, and it just withered on the vine, which is the sad state of things.
Well, and what's crazy is that even as you know, as recent as January of 17, Del Toro mm-hmm. and Perlman were both still
involved,
making the Hellboy 3. You know, I mean, they did the Twitter poll and they did the hashtag Hellboy 3. And
well, and the thing is, too, they said they need like $120 million. And to quote Del Toro, nobody's knocking down doors to give us that, which is a fucking shame. And I think a lot of fans would do that now in retrospect.
Well, no, I think that's one of those things where, you know, the online petitions and all of this other stuff mm-hmm. to get shit made. You know, Deadpool kind of kicked it off.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Reynolds kicked it off with the Deadpool thing and all that social media stuff. And I think that, you know, of course, Perlman wanted to come back to play Hellboy. And I think Del Toro wanted to direct a new Hellboy movie.
Yeah, everyone wanted to do it.
But I think it's one of those things where sometimes the stars just don't align. And so what they do instead is they cast, you know, young Ron Perlman lookalike David Harbour as Hellboy in this one. And they hand the reins over to Neil Marshall. And for those of you who don't know who Neil Marshall is, congratulations. You're one of the many, many population that has no clue. But Neil Marshall essentially directed The Descent in 2005, Doomsday in 2008, and Centurion in 2010. Then he took a 4-year layoff before coming roaring back to do a bunch of single and duo episodes of a ton of television shows,
good television shows.
Sure, it was Constantine, Game of Thrones, Black Sails, Hannibal, Timeless, Westworld, Lost in Space. I mean, he did a bunch of mm-hmm. good television. He directed a bunch of good television. But once again, he took 4 years off in between.
Well,
why?
And also, television
is so different.
Is very, very different than right. movies. Movies, the director has all say, all control. Right. The script be damned. The cinematographer be damned. I'm going to do it my way.
Right.
Whereas in television, the writers, the showrunners are the kings of the castle, and the director is just kind of there right. and told, you have X amount of time to get these shots in exactly this order, figure it out. And they have a lot less creative freedom.
Right. There is
more of a technical proficiency when it right. comes to television.
Well, and there is still a freedom there to kind of do what you want to do with camera angles and stuff like that.
Within reason.
Within yeah. reason. Because of course, if you're looking at it with things like Constantine and Westworld and Game of Thrones, they have their signature shots that they mm-hmm. use in all of those shows. And each episode, while going to have the stamp of the director that's involved, it still has to hit all of those marks for continuity of the television show itself. Whereas then you have things like Doomsday, which was a clusterfuck, and The Descent, which is just bad.
So
I know you don't want me to get into it yet.
Well,
I can see
it's like
in your
just
face.
Let's wrap up the Del Toro bit.
Fine,
so
we'll wrap up the Del Toro bit.
Ron Perlman was still slated to be involved in the reboot originally, but he said he wouldn't do it without Del Toro, and they didn't want to give the money, and he was involved with other things, and they just did a Hollywood producer standby answer, fuck you, we'll get someone new to do it. Which then they brought in the director, and they brought in Andrew Cosby, a writer who has been the creator of Eureka, written three episodes of The 77, wrote three episodes of a different show that you never heard of, and then Hellboy.
Right.
So we've got a total of six episodes of a half-hour-long television show, not even a full-length feature to then write this Hellboy script.
Mm-hmm. Alone,
and
mind you.
He wrote it with in conjunction with Hellboy's creator, but I think by that it just means, hey, can I see your notes?
Well, so here's the thing. Mignola did take a more active role in this one because he actually was not happy with Hellboy 1 and 2 because they – as he put it, overplayed the hero part.
Right.
And the comic books are dark.
Yeah.
And you know, they're violent, they're dark, they're adult comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that and Del Toro, while still maintaining a lot of the adult themes, did somewhat tone it down a bit from what
he was more heroic.
Right. He was more the hero. It was the hero's journey, I think, in the first movie, mm-hmm. the anti-hero's journey, I think is a better way to look at it. And so, you know, Mignola took a bigger role in this one. And I liken that, this is spoiler free, but I mm-hmm. liken Mignola taking a bigger role very much like Frank Miller had a large role in The Spirit.
Or Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive that he directed.
Right, right. It was very, very similar to both of those movies.
So when we mentioned his name now, and I think it's just kind of going to break at this point. The true festering core that is this movie, like any bad movie, because it's bad, is the script. And Andrew Cosby cannot write. He can copy paste from Wikipedia or the Hellboy Wikipedia page, but he can't write, apparently, because there are a number of issues with this. Primarily, it comes down to the writing and then the directing. The writing is the biggest thing because it is 9 movies worth of content, the entire Hellboy lineage, absolutely packed to the brim in a suitcase full of sadness, and the lid just won't shut, and it just keeps overflowing with mistakes. I looked at Brian within the first 5 minutes of this exposition-heavy assault on the senses and knew we were in for a bad time. Because yeah. The thing is, we mentioned a little bit of this on Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary felt like it was on fast forward to try and get to the ending. Hellboy feels like it is just sprinting through and yelling at you the whole time. You feel strapped to a rocket and you have no idea what is happening because they throw so many names, so many characters, so much exposition. You've never seen a movie with exposition quite like Hellboy 2019.
I think that's a fair statement there. And I think that, you know, there were the writing, the directing, they're both atrocious. But also, I think some of the choices go into mm-hmm. the screaming of every line. I think it's one of those things where as you're watching the movie, you're going to see that David Harbour made the choice to play Hellboy as more of a almost like a teenager.
Angry teenager.
Like an angry teenager.
He's angsty.
Yeah, who's it's kind of like Spider-Man 3
Ugh.
With emo Spider-Man.
That's the thing is that, you know, some people will say, and we heard this from some critics, that it's not necessarily fair to compare it to Del Toro's Hellboy. I don't think that's necessarily an apt description because it refers to events.
Well, not just that. It doesn't just refer to events. It actually
replicates
characters from it. And side note, Doug Jones, who played Abe Sapien mm-hmm. in the original movies, was offered a chance to come back for this movie for a cameo mm-hmm. and couldn't because he was too busy filming Star Trek Discovery.
Mm.
So there was a scene that apparently, and I guess this is a non-spoiler spoiler.
Yeah, but it's not surprising.
There's a scene where we should have had Doug Jones in the movie, but we don't get to because he was too busy making something of quality.
Yeah.
So
but it's just... Honestly, I don't know how to describe it. This movie was a nonstop frenetic assault on the senses, over the top, overly violent, over exposition, too much yelling, loud, unnecessary stuff, things that were just thrown at you. No one takes a moment to breathe. There, if you've ever seen old cartoons or old movies where people would talk really fast, like, did you see what's in the paper today? The paper today? Yes, the paper today. Why? I haven't seen it yet. Let me see it. Oh, you should see it right here. See right here on page four? Page four? Yes, page four. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
It never stops.
No, it's kind of like
breathe.
It's those days where, you know, we were talking about it beforehand. It's kind of like when Mike and I are in studio together and I decide that what I need to say is more important. And so I just attempt to talk louder and over him. It's like, if you do that, but you don't ever overlap the person you're talking with, it's simultaneous speaking, but not simultaneously.
It was like any breath or moment was edited out,
right,
so that it was just constant noise.
I think a lot of podcasters do this where they edit out any pauses because they think that means more content. And they think it means a better show if there's no silence in the show. And I think a lot of people that do radio and do broadcasting make those mistakes.
Yeah.
When they first start out.
And that's really what it feels like. It is, while the director has done two or three other feature length films prior to this, it feels like somebody's first movie. It's absolutely the writer's first movie. There's no doubt about that.
I look at it this way. The last thing he did was in 2010 was the last movie he did.
Centurion, yeah.
Right. That was in 2010. So you take 7 or 8 years off.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you're getting a new fresh start. And it is almost like you're doing the first movie.
It really is.
You know, you're doing a reboot of the very first Dark Horse Comics reboot, you know, it's a new character. You want to put your stamp on it. And yet you continually put references to your predecessors.
Who is better?
Who is 100%, if not 1,000% better.
And that's the thing, is that when I look at the main character of this movie, again, the writing is the problem because it's exposition heavy and there's a bunch of different things that don't need to be there. But the biggest thing, honestly, in a Hellboy movie is that he sucks. And I'm not saying this to the actor. I'm saying the character.
Yeah.
He is an angsty teenager who gets his, frankly, ass kicked far too often for my liking.
So it's one of those things, man, where as you're watching the movie, he's not likable.
No. Ron Perlman had this charisma to him. There was little quirks about him,
right,
that you could
like the cat thing,
he loves his paydays and things like that,
right? Like the little things that
made him human.
Well, it made him relatable.
Yes,
it doesn't necessarily make him human; it makes him relatable. And
and
we're gonna go just real quick into a spoiler here, just real real fast, talking about all of the different storylines. Hellboy in this movie has three origins. There are three origins in this movie.
Yeah.
Three origins, and one of them is how they attempt to make him human, not by characterization, not by emotion, not by making him relatable, literally by telling you something about his origin.
Now you should change your opinion.
Technically makes him human. It's ridiculous. That just goes back to there are a lot of plot problems. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of writing problems in it. And like I said, I think that the actor, David Harbour, that's playing Hellboy, with, of course, the sign off of the director or at the director's direction, plays this as an angsty teenager who has no volume control and very little impulse control.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that made Ron Perlman's Hellboy work was the impulse control. It made him more human. It's the Tony Stark drinking problem.
Yeah.
You know, it makes him relatable, because who can relate to a billionaire? Fucking nobody.
No one. Right.
But can you relate to Tony Stark because he has real world problems?
Alcoholism
and relationship issues and trust issues and things that you can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Hellboy. And that was the other thing that they played off of, the trust issues in the first couple of Hellboy movies.
Yeah.
That he has, and the not knowing where he belongs and all of that. And they don't use exposition to give that to you. They literally, you see it on Ron Perlman's face.
Yeah.
Because even with the prosthetics, at least he was still expressive.
Mm-hmm.
And because he had normal looking eyes, his eyes told the story.
Yeah.
And I think that this movie, with all of the prosthetics and all of the special effects makeup that they used, took away any ounce of relatable humanity, human
relatable
emotion
yeah.
from his face. And I think that that goes a long way into hurting this character.
We can't connect.
No, there's literally no way to connect, and there's no way to connect with any of the situations that he's in either.
You wouldn't even want to, because again, he's played as an angsty teenager. You sitting there don't relate to, can't sympathize with, and so much of the dialogue is either angry yelling or really bad Buffy the Vampire Slayer looking jokes.
Well, it's
somebody
like, it's
a zombie like it, gets their head kicked and we yell goal.
It's almost like
come on.
It's almost as if Joss Whedon had a brain hemorrhage and tried to write the quips.
Yeah.
You know, like he's in the middle of a
It's someone
aneurysm.
Trying to do Joss Whedon quips and not knowing what makes them work. And well, each one lands flat.
Well, and that's the whole thing is that like as we're sitting there and you can tell the parts that are supposed to be funny because the music changes or there is actually a pause for laughter. Like it's a goddamn laugh track on Friends, but it's just not there.
Yeah.
And it's not there. It misses on so many marks. And, you know, let's go into some of the technical stuff.
Well, as you say, the one thing that it hits right, perhaps, is the dark violence and gore. But because it hits it and hits it and hits it and won't stop hitting it, it becomes a demerit on its own.
Well, and that's the thing. I think the word that I used the phrase I used was actually torture porn shortly after the movie. It's one of those things where for those of you that like that kind of thing, you're going to be disappointed. And for those of you that don't like that kind of thing, you're really going to be disappointed.
You're going to be turned off.
Well, and the whole thing is that there's a ton of fake blood in the movie.
Yeah.
There are a ton of scenes where, you know, stuff gets split open and things go flying and things get ripped in half and
torn off and cut in pieces and blown up.
But it's overkill.
Yeah.
Because one of the things with that gore, the gore stuff, is that when you do it in moderation, I think we had a couple movies mm-hmm. where we talked about it where there was gore, but it wasn't
over the top.
Right. This one is like, oh, you guys like gore? Cool. I'm going to give you gore inside your exhibit. Help me with this gore. That's what it feels like.
I have never... like truly never seen a movie with this much violence.
Well,
this would have been better as a video game because it has so much going on, so much traveling here, traveling there, stupid plot
and
elements.
Actually, you know what? Now that you say that, that's exactly what this reminds me of because the exposition, A, it doesn't fit.
No.
It takes you out of the movie. It's weird to the narrative. It's exactly like Rockstar Games.
Yeah. It would have been better as a video game because it is so violent, and I usually don't have a problem with that, but even I was like, god damn, because at the end some shit goes down and a moment that should be wow, we've really hit it, and it's probably the best moment in the movie for me, and I that'll be a spoilers discussion, but it goes over the line at that point. And again, I'm not somebody who ever gives a fuck about that, but even I was sitting there like, good Lord, this is a lot. It's just a lot because it had been nonstop this whole time.
Right.
So what feels like it should be a crescendo just overflows.
Well, and that's the whole thing is that, you know, when you're talking about gore and you're talking about violence and all of that, what you want is like this slow build or, you know, you want to have a couple like allusions to what's coming.
Mm-hmm. So that when it does break,
you're like, damn!
It hits all the harder.
But instead, what you get is just a whole lot of, ooh, oh, ugh.
And
Jesus, is this done yet?
And
I'm sick.
What scenes weren't deliberately spouting, you know, just torrents of blood were still unsettling to look at. And I will give it praise. There's a couple practical effects and practical costumes and choreography with one character in particular mm-hmm. that are very unsettling in the right way.
Right.
But to the point where I'm almost like, oh, Jesus, even I don't want to look at this.
Well, and it's like I've watched movies like Tokyo Gore Police and that
You're
kind of
weird.
Stuff. Well, no, I mean, Tokyo Gore Police, I literally watched it because somebody told me that there was a girl who had an alligator as a vagina. Like, how can you not watch a movie if somebody tells you that?
Well,
like,
fair.
You kind of have to watch it. Like, wait, how does that work? It works. And you know, that movie is crazy gory.
Mm-hmm.
It is. But then actually, if my recollection is correct, it has less gore than this movie.
It was just so much.
And that was the whole thing is it was overkill. Because like even like, remember Blade?
Yeah.
How occasionally there would be scenes where there's just blood everywhere.
Well, I mean, the opening blood orgy scene.
Sure. The opening blood where you don't
great
know.
Great scene.
It's a fantastic scene. And it kind of, and it sets the tone for the whole movie,
yeah.
But the whole movie doesn't include all of that gore. This right. movie starts very similar to that, where it's very bloody and very gory at the very beginning, the first 5 minutes. And then it just never takes its foot off the pedal, which sometimes that works, like Drive. That worked for Drive. Never taking your foot off of the pedal worked. But then, like in this movie, there were scenes where you're like, yo, you don't need that.
Well, it also works when you have those bits where you have nothing and then out of nowhere it hits, like in Us.
Right.
You can have both, but this just went, can we push the pedal through the floor keep going?
Well, and not only that, then, you know, talking about the screaming of the lines, the music in this and it, the music, they chose great music. Like I know you don't really. Necessarily care
some of them
music.
I care. I like,
but it was, you know, what was it? Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. Is that the name of the band?
I'm not certain.
Something along those lines. I can't remember.
Alice Cooper, Motley Crue.
Motley Crue. I think there was a Queen-esque song in there. Like, I mean, it was all rock, right?
Yeah.
Which in the right movie fits. It doesn't fit.
No,
it's straight.
That's more of an editing thing because it's just right. placed in places.
And that's what I mean. It's like the music, the score. Well, there's an absence of score in that they used a bunch of like 80s hair metal, and like that works in a film or a movie that wants to use like what this movie wanted mm-hmm. was death metal.
Yeah,
that's what it wanted. And what they did was they took all of the fastest, hardest songs from famous bands.
Yeah, and they don't quite hit.
It doesn't quite fit. Like it's just the timing is off. The lyrics make no sense.
There's a scene near the end that has a Motley Crue song, which really needed like a Devil Driver song, something that is much more violent and dark to fit the imagery that we're going for.
And that's
for.
What I mean. It's like, it's almost like you're getting a bunch of like, and it's not pop rock, but it's like rock light.
It is popular rock and roll from the 80s, have been hard in the day, but.
Right. Like now you listen to it and you're just like, yo, where's the drums? It's not Methods of Mayhem. It's Motley Crue. Like, that's the difference.
And the thing is, too, it's a lack of consistency. The music doesn't quite fit what we're seeing. The gore and violence over the top and the yelling don't fit with this narrative that's trying to be 10 different things all at once and needed a desperate need of a hedge trimmer or a fucking lawnmower at this point.
Right.
And even the stuff that is, like, the cornerstone of this fucking movie, because what else is there? The special effects are not consistent.
Right.
Well, we have scenes where some scenes look great and other ones look terrible.
Well,
and sometimes there's one character that shifts between, I'm like, okay, this looks good. And now you look like shit as you're talking. What is happening?
And I think my biggest issue with the movie, with the special effects, is that I compare it to Del Toro, the arm of doom, right? In the Del Toro movies. Looks like it's a part of Ron Perlman's body.
It really does.
In this movie, it looks like David Harbour stuck his arm in PVC and styrofoam and a glove made to look like rock, and then they painted it red. And it never looks like it's part of his body.
No, it's very obvious that he's holding a bar.
He always has a sleeve on.
Yeah.
Always. And the fingers don't really move.
No.
He doesn't grab anything with it. He doesn't do anything with it.
It's not real.
No, and it doesn't look real. It doesn't feel real.
It doesn't look real. It doesn't feel real. There's no moment where it isn't covered up by the sleeve. It's far too long. So you know he's just holding the bar like one of those old sock and bopper massive boxing gloves. Yeah.
Well, it looks like he's holding the Hulk hand that you buy at
Target.
He's
wearing Hulk hand.
Right. And that's what it looks like.
It looks bad.
It does. And I think that was the biggest detractor for me, because the arm was such an important part. It's such an important part of who Hellboy mm-hmm. is. And to just completely disregard it, you take every other aspect from every single comic that's ever been written about Hellboy, and you leave out the one thing that truly kind of separates him. And I know that they use that to turn him into a superhero in the first two movies. And I get that that's probably why they got away from it. But yo, it's fucking important. Like, that arm is fucking important. It's super important. Like, yes, the horns are important. The filing down of the horns. But do we really need a scene that's 10 minutes of somebody filing his fucking horn? Like, Jesus fucking Christ.
It feels like they tried to go... The only people I could see enjoying this, beyond people who just love gratuitous, over-the-top stuff, would be diehard Hellboy fans might see it and say, finally, I get to see a lot of the comic related stuff thrown in here. But the problem is they've put way too much that nothing gets any screen time of value. And we learned too many things will fuck a movie up from Spider-Man 3 over 10 years ago.
Well, right.
And it suffers immensely because even if you were to have a sequel for this, what the fuck's left?
Well, and that's the whole thing is that they threw in so much stuff into this. And there are two end credit sequences. And those, if you read the comics, would tell you where mm-hmm. the next one is going. But it doesn't fit. Like yeah. nothing fits. It all feels like it's like watching clips from a television series where you had six seasons and you just watch 2 hours of clips from those six seasons where you have the exposition and then the action, mm-hmm. then exposition, then action, then exposition, then action. There isn't a first act, a second act, and a third act. It's literally just expo action, yeah. expo action, and expo action, the whole movie.
Except for even him, and while his characterization is exceptionally weak mm-hmm. by comparison, no one else is of value or importance, especially when you have Ian McMotherfucking Shane
right.
on your docket. How does he not... I don't know what his agent or he is thinking lately, but some of his roles have been like, I don't give a fuck. I'm here.
Well, and I mean, I love Ian McShane.
I do too.
Like, I mean, I actually love him. I mean, from Deadwood to, I know you loved him in Pirates, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, even that was.
Well, sure. But yeah. The John Wick movies, I love mm-hmm. his character in the John Wick movies.
He's a good actor.
Mr. Wednesday in American Gods. Holy shit.
He's a good actor.
He's a great actor.
He's fun to watch. And they give him nothing but being angry. And that, like, everyone is a one-note thing.
Right.
The cop guy who's kind of his buddy is a dick, and that's, like, his only thing.
Right.
The girl is the girl, and she's a psychic, and therefore that's her only thing. His dad is kind of a prick, and that's his only thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hellboy is the most with an
teenager.
Angsty teenager who doesn't really feel like he belongs, but we don't truly move beyond that.
Well,
not because
care.
Of decisions he made himself, but because he needed someone else to say, hey, don't do that shit.
Well, right,
in the background.
Right, and that's the other thing too. Okay, so I think at this point, we're what, 30 some odd minutes into this
yeah.
thing? So let's go. Obviously, guys, if you haven't inferred already, don't fucking see this movie. Like, don't waste your fucking dollars. Don't. I'm sorry. It's shit.
See any other movie we've recommended this year or didn't even like this year
honestly,
prior to seeing
honestly,
this?
Honestly, you know, Thomas, you and I reviewed Us.
Us right? and Glass.
And we didn't like either of those movies, really.
We liked Us.
It was okay.
We liked it, but our experience was tainted.
Right. So if you're going to see something, go see Us. Dead serious.
Go see Us.
Go see Us.
Go see Glass. Go see fucking Glass.
Right. Go to the Dollar Theater and go see Glass. But no, this was, I would venture to say this is definitely bottom five of what we've ever seen.
It's just a mess.
Like, you guys all know our hatred for Llewyn Davis. Like, we,
yeah.
I know Mike's in the background going, God damn it, quit talking about fucking Llewyn Davis. But we hated that movie. It sucked. So I would rather watch it again. I would rather watch Jack the Giant Slayer again, because at least its special effects were decent.
I think it's shorter.
It is shorter. Thomas, I would rather watch The Host again.
Mm.
Yeah. Come on. Tell me you wouldn't actually rather see The Host.
I mean, maybe I could laugh at that one.
Right. Exactly. But... Oh, you know who we didn't talk about, though, real quick? We didn't talk about Mila Jovovich.
That's how relevant she was.
Well, here's the thing.
We didn't talk about
it. She's a decent actress. But if y'all remember that character that she played in The Fifth Element in the first movie she ever did, she plays that same character, only not on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same quality.
The director can't get the performances needed. The script is a mess.
The
special effects are inconsistent. There's way too much exposition. It's so frenetic and fast-paced for no reason, and you are just bombarded with information that's not relevant. Even in the last 5 minutes, they introduce a new group of some secret goddamn fucking society. that almost you can guarantee only some comic book fans. What Marvel did well, like, for example, in Winter Soldier, it's like, we use it to track people, you know, like the president and Doctor Strange, like important movers and shakers. Right. You're like, oh, I got that.
Right.
There's a little touch to the next thing. This is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sickening with how much there is.
It's insane. So let's go into some spoilers here. Yeah.
Avoid Hellboy.
Well, I mean, obviously avoid Hellboy, guys, at all costs. So we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to go into spoilers.
What are you looking at, nerd? Huh?
I thought I was looking at my mother's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio.
Geek Out Saturday.
The biblical allegories that we talked about last week with the innocence, like much like we saw with the first creations, Adam and Eve, that I think definitely connects to the general theme of Westworld.
What is that, you might ask? For me, first second that happened, I was like, hey, that probably has something to do with kryptonite.
Darth Vader could not open the crystal. Kanan cannot open the crystal. Ahsoka cannot open the crystal, okay? The reason I'm pointing this out in this episode, what does the Bendu do? He takes the
starting
thing.
Starting point and an ending point, and it told its story pretty damn well. There's a couple gripes or a few little changes that anybody on the internet or ourselves have talked about, but overall, season 11 was great. I look back at season 10 now with...
Catch up on your favorite Rayman digital geek shows every Saturday. DC on CW... Back to Tank, Weird West Radio, The Crossroads, and more. Geek Out Saturday on Rain Man Channel 001. Listen from the Rain Man digital app or tune in. Just search RM Channel 001.
All right, guys, welcome back. So you stuck around for the spoilers. We appreciate you, and I promise you, you're not going to be disappointed. So here's the deal.
Well, if you see it, you will be.
Well, I mean, if you see the movie, that's on you. All right, we fucking warned you. And we're going to continue to warn you for the next 25 minutes, mm-hmm. because here's the deal with this movie. It gives you, the plot of this movie.
Which Hellboy, one?
So hold on. I'm getting there. So Hellboy is here. He's on Earth. He's working for BPRD. Those of you that remember BPRD from the Ryan Reynolds movie that was an absolute, what was Ryan Reynolds, right?
Oh God.
Yeah. Right. Ryan Reynolds movie. Same general. It's the BPRD.
RIPD was the...
Right, RIPD. Yeah. So anyway, so BPRD is the Bureau for the Paranormal... Blah, 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 blah,
Department.
Yeah, Defense, whatever.
Department of Idiots.
I don't know. Either way, so...
Department of Regret.
So you have Ian McShane is Hellboy's father, mm-hmm. right? That was John Hurt's character in the original.
Right.
John Hurt's character played it very differently than Ian McShane does.
Old... grandfatherly father for somebody who is Hellboy's age is like in their 40s, the age appropriate vibe.
Right. So what we get is it's the same thing that you had, the same origin story, a very similar mm-hmm. origin story to what's in the comics and what is the Guillermo del Toro origin, mm-hmm. where he is summoned, he shows up, John Hurt, Ian
takes
McShane,
him as in
takes him in as his own and makes him his son. Now, that is one of the origin stories that you guys get to see. The second origin story is that actually Ian McShane was there to murder him and didn't do it. Right? That's mm-hmm. the second origin
ripped
story.
With characters and events ripped straight from the previous Del Toro's first
right.
Hellboy.
Right. Including Sandman.
Well, the
Rasputin.
Thing is, not even. It's like, hey, do you remember that knife-wielding sand Nazi? Well, that guy that looks like him, that's not him.
Right. Remember that girl that was in that first one, the blonde one? Yeah, that's not her either.
Remember Rasputin being this intimidating villain? Not this guy.
Right. No, this Rasputin's going to get killed real quick.
It just shows us some things.
Right. So that's one origin story. Then you
that's
get
the second.
That's the second one. Then the third origin story is how Hellboy was
it's
actually
Rosemary's
born.
Baby.
It's Rosemary's baby. So here's the deal. So because we have to tie this into King Arthur, right? You have to. So King Arthur had a daughter who had a daughter who had a daughter who had a daughter who had a daughter
who had a thing for demons.
But that daughter used to ride a winged goat.
And I mean ride.
Well, hold on. We're getting there. She then marries the winged goat. When she marries the winged goat on her wedding night, she is taken down to hell and dies rearing a demon baby. Said demon baby... You guessed it, guys. Hellboy. So, Hellboy is part man, but not any man. He is now the rightful king of England as King Arthur's only living heir and half demon. So he's Jesus.
This is the third origin that takes place about an hour and 30 minutes into the movie.
Right.
Of a 2-hour movie in which we go to another location to bring back a separate character who only exists for this exposition scene.
Right.
Who then immediately dies.
Right. Because Merlin, of course, you guys know Merlin. He's King Arthur's wizard.
He's hanging out.
He's been in a tomb and Hellboy finds him because someone told him he had to find Merlin. Merlin then tries to get
some old witch whose only existence is to tell him he's King Arthur.
Right.
Which only happens because that's the only way to defeat the witch.
But remember, that old witch is actually no one other than Russian Baba Yaga, who lives in the chicken-legged house. Okay.
Now, does this sound like a whole shitload of nonsense?
Yeah, I'm not even too halfway through yet.
And that's how we felt.
Hold on, guys. We have more. So Baba Yaga tells him he has to go find Merlin. He goes and finds Merlin. Merlin tries to get him to take Excalibur out of the stone, but he doesn't take Excalibur out of the stone because, much like in the first Hellboy movie, when he sees himself with the horns and the fire crown and the flaming sword, he is wrecking humanity.
He sees what he might end up being, which was, I'll admit, like, when he first shows up,
that was dope.
That was a very well done scene. Like, the special effects look great. Yes. I liked that.
Yes, yes. So that was one of the few times where the special effects were good. Had the whole movie just been that, had the whole movie been Hellboy wrecking humanity, would have been a better movie. If Hellboy was actually smiting me personally in the face with a flaming sword, I would have had a better time than watching this movie. So, because really, the sweet, sweet release of death would have been better than sitting through this 2-hour fuck fest. Hold on. We're not done with the plot yet.
Oh, no, I know.
So we now have 3 origin stories. There's also some random girl named Alice, who's a medium, who apparently he saved when she was a baby because a fairy had taken her and replaced her with a shapeshifter. That shapeshifter is the goat-faced, pig-faced man who is now going to bring back the Queen of Blood, who's played by Mila Jovovich, who we saw in the beginning because she was killed by Arthur, bringing this full circle for at least this first 30 minutes.
Well, and again, now, again, it's origins of Alice, which isn't relevant. It's only there to somehow tie in her interest and the pig guy. And the thing is, too, his entire character felt like, do you remember the incredibly racist stereotypes from Transformers Revenge of the Fallen?
What you talking about, me?
That's what he felt like. This fucking joke of a character.
So what was it that I said when he first came on stage? I was like, is he Bebop or Rocksteady? I never remember which one was
TNMT,
a pig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like. It's what it felt like. And he was the character I was referring to where the special effects seemed to wax and wane.
Yeah, like
in
sometimes
life.
It looked great. And then other times it looked like his mouth was being controlled by strings in the air.
It had moments where he was practical and then this was CGI and then he's talking and it looks unsettling because it's not good CGI, but then that looks like it's good practical puppetry, and now it's back to what is happening. Yeah. Am I high right now?
Yeah, no. Honestly, dude, I think it might have been better if you were.
And just stupid little weird things that made you chuckle because you're like, that is the dumbest thing I have ever seen.
So back to the plot. Now, Arthur killed the queen. The queen's body was then chopped up into 5 pieces. They tell us that story no less than twice during the movie.
The same one we've watched.
Right. And now, remember, we were sitting here an hour ago when they told us that story. It's not like we all got up, left, and then came back. No, yeah. We were here. So now you have the King Arthur story twice. Now you have Merlin coming back. Okay. Then you have Pig Boy and the girl. Then you get Daniel Kim. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Daniel Kim from Lost. Right. The Asian dude on Lost. So he comes in and
apparently he fought Predator.
Right. Well, hold on. So then they wanted to do like an homage to Predator. So he gets an origin story for why he can turn into a jaguar because he's a wagwar. It's fucking
werewolf
weird.
Jaguar,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a werewire. It's weird. I don't understand it. And so he does that, but he keeps shooting himself in the leg with this weird serum that I guess is supposed to stop the transformation. I don't know, man.
I thought it was like a liquid Jolly Rancher.
Right. I don't know. That's what it looked like, right? But then he's deciding that he needs to kill Hellboy, just like the Knights of Columbus decided that they needed to kill, not the Knights of Columbus. What was their name?
Knights of Osiris. Club of Osiris.
Yeah, the Osiris Club.
Jesus Christ.
Right. The Osiris Club. If you guys know who Osiris is, that's an Egyptian goddess. So anyway,
when where's the Black Fire Club in this whole fucking thing?
You know, dude, I don't know. I don't know. So the Osiris Club then gets Hellboy over there. Oh, that's right, because he had to fight giants. So he fights three giants, but those giants, and then the Osiris Club, they tried to kill him, and like literally
stroke out.
I'm not even kidding you. Trying to remember the plot of this movie less than an hour after watching it is, like Thomas said, going to give me a stroke.
And that's still probably missing the
at least half of the middle.
There's just so much here that's not relevant, except for the fact that it exists only to get us to the next bit as we traveled the world. And that's where it felt like it could have been a much better video game plot, where you play as Hellboy. You start out like a little weak bitch and you have to level up RPG style. And there's one great threat, but she's going to take her time while you have to find all these MacGuffin pieces and meet characters. Hey, remember him from the comic books? Well, this is an 80-hour video game, or at least a 12-hour video game, so it makes sense with the amount of characters and concepts and places we visit thrown in. Here, it's just this breakneck pace of having things happen for the sake of having them happen. And again, the violence and gore is so over the top throughout everything, and it's always just constantly yelling at you.
Well, and I think
that the ending where these I don't even know what the fuck you'd call them, but horrifying monstrosities from the deepest pits of hell show up, like some moment from Attack on Titan or War of the Worlds, where they just annihilate people in the street.
Well, and the thing is, though, is that every one of those monsters looked like the Pan's Labyrinth monsters.
And that was the best part, because it's we finally open up the pit of hell. They look like something from Del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth. They look well done. The special effects work. But it's been so much violence already that even watching this, which is like well done, I'm like, this is just so much.
Right. Well, that was when I was alluding to people getting ripped in half, were these demon monsters who honestly only had about a minute of screen time
before they're gone again,
which was a shame, honestly. So I gave you guys about, I don't know, a third of the plot in 10 minutes. I didn't even touch on a lot of stuff about the plot. And that's the really fucked up part about this movie, is that like, I gave you guys a shitload of information. I guarantee you that none of you listening remember what I said, because none of that actually mattered to the movie.
What Del Toro took and ran with, the humanity aspect, the relatability, with the one concept of, are you going to be the savior or the destroyer of our world? With a focused narrative around Rasputin and the crimes of our past and what we didn't take care of with his father coming back to haunt him, they have as a footnote,
exactly,
as the base level of the main plot,
right,
and all this other stuff dumped on top of it, that in a serialized comic book where you need people to be interested week to week, month to month, that kind of works. But here it's too much for a movie. And the worst part is, they don't even have, whether it's his werguar friend, not even friend, go through some character change, or Hellboy. No one goes through an advanced change because of the decisions they make. He only doesn't end the world and succumb to the temptation.
Because the ghost his father screamed at him not to.
Stop being a bitch.
Yeah. He said, put your big boy pants on, grow some balls,
grow a pair.
You're a man, and a good man at that. Like, all of this.
It shows that he had no identity with who he was before and doesn't undergo a change. Hellboy in the first movie makes that decision himself after the death of his father, after he is now alone and has to step up. There wasn't a moment when a disembodied ghost, which looked like the fucking creepy little neck thing of Johnny Knoxville in Men in Black 2, but like on a full-sized scale with just as bad CGI, told him, hey, stop being a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I was going to bring destruction and chaos to all of mankind, but now that ghost eel dad told me to do this, it shook me out of this funk I was in.
And that's the whole thing, man, is that like what worked in the Del Toro movies, you could see that they tried to do something similar and just failed miserably.
And see, and that's the thing, is that this, we had just seen Pet Sematary. We just reviewed that last week. when you're adapting something, you have to make it work. What they took out destroyed the underlying themes of Pet Sematary. What Del Toro took and ran with made the adaptation work. Here, it's just a copy-paste job, and it's too much for 120 pages.
Well, and here's the thing, dude. I honestly believe that it was only 120 pages.
I guarantee this had to be longer.
But no. Hold on. Hear me out here. But every action sequence was literally written as action sequence. And that's how you make it 120 pages.
More than 120 pages of plot.
You don't describe anything. You just write action sequence or London daytime. That's all the description you get. Everything else on this is paragraphs of exposition.
Yeah.
Because that was literally it. Like, it was either a poorly timed and horribly delivered quip or exposition. Those were the only two options for dialogue.
And this is a really nitpicky gripe by comparison, but film fans are going to notice it right away. The ADR.
Oh.
Or automated dialogue replacement, where they couldn't get a phrase because of sound issues on set, or they rewrote the script and had to add it later. There's a nuance to doing that right, to where you don't quite notice it. Although if you're a film buff, you almost always know when they're doing it.
Here's the thing, though. There's a difference between noticing it and literally being smacked in the face with it. Because what happens in this movie is that the ADR, so let's say it's a big action scene and they decide that they're going to throw in some quip in the middle of the action scene delivered by, doesn't matter who. It needs to match what's going on in the scene. The background noises need to continue through the delivery.
It needs to sound like natural, he's saying it there, not like it was recorded in a sound booth and placed into timeline later.
So you know how when you're watching, for those of you that aren't huge film fans, I think the easiest way to talk about ADR, you know how when you're watching something and it's narrated and you can tell that it's narrated, you know, even if it's thoughts from the character, you know it's narrated because it's a very clean sounding audio. It's like it's the beginning of Twilight.
Or the Big Lebowski,
where there's those moments of narration. And you know it's, even if the character's on screen and his back is to you, then you can't see if his lips are moving. You know by sound.
He's not talking right
that
now.
That it's a narrative. You know that. All of the ADR in this movie sounded that way. All of it. It was, the editing in this movie was a goddamn joke. Yeah. I honestly, if I was involved in the making of this picture, I would be embarrassed. I would be embarrassed by the poor quality. I would be embarrassed by the lack of entertainment value. I would be embarrassed by 100% of what was put on the screen.
It went for, what if we were over the top violent and what if we had everything? Just more, more, more quantity over quality, because there is no quality to this.
The only quality that you get, like Thomas said, was in that 1 minute of demon monsters from hell that literally interact with no major characters.
They just murder people.
They exist. They murder people. They go away. And the point of even having them there, I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you, because you know that the gates of hell have opened. You can see it. You don't necessarily need those monsters. All of the destruction that they caused was completely pointless destruction, much like the Superman fight with Zod, completely pointless destruction.
Well, and the thing is, too, again, the video game comparison feels really apt because it reminded me so much of 2016's Doom.
Yeah.
Violence, gore, gratuitous, over the top.
For the sake of violence
but
and gore.
The difference was that was a power fantasy where it was like the Rorschach line. Right. I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me. You're saying to the demons as you kick demon ass to save the world. Hellboy gets his ass kicked by demons, and he has undergone a significant nerf. What his stone fist used to just punch the soul out of Jesus himself now is a paper mache toy.
It's kind of like if Thomas decided it. No, for those of you that listen to the Rain Man show and you all heard the narration of me boxing Andrew, that is exactly, it was like Andrew punching me is what this looked like.
It just
was so sad.
It's the thing is, Ron Perlman and Del Toro's Hellboy, there was moments where he's like, all right, motherfucker. And he brings out his gun and he punches with his stone fist. And you're like, shit's going to get real. Now he's fighting.
Right.
He tried to play Mr. Nice because he's trying to control that inner demon. In this, the gun is no better than a standard issue pistol.
I would actually argue that it's worse because it holds less rounds.
It holds less rounds. They make a big to-do when it first shows up, and it doesn't do or kill anyone.
Except it literally does
humans,
nothing.
Regular humans.
And that's actually the after credits scene.
Well, it's not the after credits scene. It's the end scene.
Oh, you're right. That is the end scene. You're the 6 months later.
Yeah.
Ugh. Fucking title
So
cards.
The gun doesn't do anything. His stone fist doesn't do anything. He's super strong in like one scene with the giants, but then he can't punch his way out of a paper bag at the very end of the movie.
Well, not only that, dude, he's super strong with the giants, but he exerted so much energy that he literally passes out for days.
It doesn't feel like he was strong enough in that fight to do what he's very clearly doing. And then later he gets the sword of Excalibur and all of a sudden he is the Demon King, but still not any better. Like it just, there's no satisfaction to it.
No, there's no resolution to anything that really happens here. Like some people die. That's it. That's all you get. Like, yeah. It, you know, because like in the first one, you had like the Rasputin thing and you had all of that stuff and then mm-hmm. the bringing him back and like then they stop it from happening. Well, guess what, guys? Murder Queen lives. Murder Queen made it. Even at the end, Murder Queen's body's still there, man.
Well, her head's in hell.
Is it?
Right? Yeah.
Is it?
But what does it matter? Hell's a revolving door, basically.
Right. We know that. We know hell's a because we watch demons walk out of it. So I guess the next movie, Baba Yaga just goes and gets the head and brings it back. And then we get to have the same movie again.
I know I won't watch it.
No, and that's so. Fair. And, you know, we don't ever turn down a review for the most part.
Yeah.
Like hardly ever.
Yeah.
I guarantee you if this gets a sequel, if this somehow.
There's no way.
Thomas, you say that, but we also said Donald Trump wouldn't get elected president.
Well. I'd believe that again over this.
Well, and that's the crazy part. But here's the thing. If this somehow gets a sequel, I say right now, I will not be attending that review.
No.
No way in fucking hell.
The biggest thing is, the only thing I can hope from this, truthfully, is that I hope it's somehow, with Del Toro having won a couple of Academy Awards recently, and Ron Perlman being the internet favorite that he is, especially when it comes to the Hellboy fan base, that we finally, we etch-a-sketch this out of memory. And you're not a video game fan, but Devil May Cry did a similar thing.
Actually, I have played all of those games.
Okay.
So one I do through, know. Yes.
Devil May Cry 1 through 4 are great, and then they tried to reboot, fucked it up, and then the next game was just Devil May Cry 5.
Mm-hmm.
The other one never happened.
Yep.
Ignore it entirely. Mm-hmm. I pray that this is the only result, that we skip this entire thing. And I feel bad for the lead actor.
David Harbour.
David Harbour, thank you. Because he's a good actor, but they just couldn't get the performance from him. Same with Ian McShane. And nobody else was even notable.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. Bring Ian McShane back. I don't care. He was fine.
Give him a better
script. Give him a better script. He was fine. Yeah. I could believe him as the dad.
Yeah, but John Hurt's tough to beat. But John Hurt is impossible to
beat.
Still.
He's impossible to beat. That's like trying to replace the fucking Dumbledore. Oh, wait. That did work, though.
But that's the thing, is that I can only hope that this sparks enough internet rage or desire or something to where we just get Hellboy 3. The other one didn't happen.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. So anyways, guys, I think with that, that's going to do it for us here on Critique Revolve this evening. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. Don't forget, follow us on, you know, all of the social media stuff. And well, I mean, come on, dude, we could go through it and we could say our Twitter handles and all of that. What is yours again? Thomas is a Disappointment.
Yeah.
Is that,
that's what it is. You can search that.
Yeah. Just search for @Thomas is a Disappointment. And that's on Snapchat, guys. And, no, but seriously, I mean, it's @Cesspool66. You're @BoldIrishman. And then, it's @CritiqueRevolve.
Critique Jones. Critique Revolve.
All of that good stuff there. And, you know, we appreciate you guys, and thanks for listening. Have a good night.
The Corova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet, or Centamesc, or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultra-violence.